Hi, this is Jane Garvey, and this is the Woman's Hour podcast. Victoria Hislop, welcome. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Actually, it's a day-to-day in London, because you've got to be careful. It's a big country, this, in some ways. Lovely weather. It's actually fine weather to be sitting in your backyard reading one of your novels, transporting us to the Mediterranean. But we don't really need to bother, because we're here. At least we are in London. Well, that was a long ramble. Good to see you. Author of books like The Island and The Thread and The Sunrise. And the new one is called Carte Postale.
Carte Postale from Greece.
Right. So, and it's a, well, I've heard it described as an adult picture book.
It is. I think right now there are no other full colour works of fiction for adults. And I really felt suddenly about a year or so ago that why is it only children that have beautiful colour pictures with their stories?
They've got beautiful pictures in here, actually.
And so I set about, rather gingerly approached my publisher and said, would you consider a full colour novel? And they looked a little bit aghast, because obviously the production costs
are completely
different.
Yeah.
But they said yes. So I began a tour of Greece.
Don't do yourself down. It might be because of you've had a bit of success in the past, haven't you? So they probably went with you, but I put it to you, Victoria, they might not have gone with me if I'd...
But I think I will be setting a precedent for all other writers of fiction.
They're all going to want this.
I think they are.
And actually, with this book, it's interesting. It's a series of stories within a story.
That's right.
Within another story.
Interlinked. There's sort of three layers.
Yes.
But the main narrative is told by a heartbroken man, because there are plenty of books I've read about heartbroken women, and I thought actually it would be quite interesting to get into the sort of behind, into the mind of a man who's been dumped by a woman. And this man goes on a journey all around Greece, and it's the stories that he hears and the people that he meets that help to rebuild his life.
Okay, well, I think we're going to hear now a suitably atmospheric extract. Here we go.
The immense square in Nafplio is the beating heart of the city. People flow in and out all day to talk, to play, to watch, to drink, and at weekends there is hardly a spare seat in a cafe. As if drawn by gravitational pull, couples of all ages file down the narrow, car-free Venetian streets, promenading two by two like creatures from the Ark. There is only one person in Plateia Syndagmatos who sits alone. With his glass of clear Tsipouro as company, he observes the scene with his heavily hooded eyes. Rolling a cigarette without looking down to see what he's doing, he smokes without pleasure and repeats the process again and again. An ashtray overflows in front of him, a sprinkling of grey across the table, but no one bothers to empty it, even though from time to time a waiter brings him another glass of fire water.
Well, that's from a story called The Boy in the Silver Suit. Now, I gather from this book that Greece is a nation of storytellers, that people are very happy to, well, not always, but on the whole, very happy to chat to strangers and tell them all sorts of things.
It's, for me, a very fundamental difference between the UK and Greece is that nobody treats you like a stranger. I mean, I'm now obviously having a slightly different experience when I go there because I can speak Greek. So I'm getting that experience in spades, if you like. People will sit and talk to me. And if they're older people who don't speak any English, then the conversation continues. But it is a very, very friendly country. They have a tradition of hospitality that's based on this idea that any stranger might be a god. And that's quite fun. Probably lots of even Greeks don't know that's why they're so friendly, but they're brought up to share, to talk to strangers.
That's a really good way of thinking about potential friends, actually, isn't it? That's a great great thing to do.
It is, and one doesn't get on with people all the time, but you certainly make acquaintances very
easily. I'd be really livid if some of the people I know in my current life turn out to be gods. So I'll be and also faintly surprised. But we should make it clear that the stories in your book, they're not folk stories. They're not a reworking of folk stories or anything like that. And they are fiction.
They are.
Yes.
They're entirely fiction.
Yeah.
But there's a sort of a conceit, if you like, that you could think that they were real.
Yes.
So I've sort of given it away already. But the narrator at the beginning says that you can decide whether they're real or not. And actually many stories that people tell me in Greece, they're based on something, but people exaggerate, they forget, they embroider, they add a little bit that shows their own perspective. So
I mean, you say that everybody's friendly in Greece, and I've been to Greece recently, and you're right, most people are incredibly friendly. But there are some stories in this book that hint at a rather darker world and Arcadia. Now, tell me about the village of Arcadia.
Well, I think my sort of feminist side has grown, it grows by the day, I think. When I was a teenager, I wasn't remotely feminist. But as the years go by, and now in my 50s, I definitely get a sense of sometimes of hostility from men in Greece, particularly. I don't really notice it here so much. But there are still institutions in Greece, such as the Kafanion, the cafe, which is the sort of cornerstone of every village, which are very male.
And well, like women, a working men's club in the
old
days.
I suppose very much like that. And women simply don't go in there. They're not welcome. So this village in Arcadia, which traditionally we all think of Arcadia as being a paradise, it turns out to be a place where women are essentially excluded, where women have almost been thrown out. And a young woman goes to visit this village to find her roots. Her father had lived there, and she expects to be welcomed. She expects this philoxenia, this hospitality I've described, and she gets completely the opposite. And it's really, in some ways, a metaphorical story about how alienated women can feel.
And that story began because you saw a woman on a hillside, didn't you? Just describe her.
Yeah, we were driving up a mountain towards this village that I wanted to visit. And from behind, she was a man. I mean, she had huge shoulders and just the whole demeanour, and her face, very craggy, was very male. And then as we got closer and she looked around, I realised that actually she was a woman. And it was quite a shocking moment to see that this woman, in a way, to survive, had had to lose her femininity. And unfortunately, I couldn't use her face in the book. I really wanted to show a photograph of her, this look that she'd given me, which the photographer caught on camera.
What was it, defiant? Or
it was very. It was a look of. It was a killer look, really. But to me, she's embodied this toughness that women have to have in Greece.
We can't talk about Greece without acknowledging the financial crisis, obviously, and indeed migrants, because there are reminders just about every day of what the country is dealing with. And there is one story in your book about a young Albanian boy on, well, you tell me, but it's a sort of Greek National Day.
Yes, it's actually based on a real event that took place in 2003 on their National Independence Day, from the Turks back in the 19th century, and they commemorate it each year with a parade. And in this parade, the top scholar in every class has this honour of carrying a big Greek flag at the head of the procession for their class. Mm-hmm. And back in 2003, an Albanian child in a city in Greece was the top of the class, so he was going to be carrying the flag, and there was an outcry, and the parents went mad. They went on strike. However, people go on strike in unusual ways. I'm not quite sure what parents did there, but there was a massive fuss about it. And in the end, this child withdrew and said, "Okay, I won't carry it." So there is an underlying suspicion and fear of the foreigner in Greece that kind of is contradictory to this hospitality.
Right, and there's also, I mean, there has been in the past, I don't think it's unfair to say, a reluctance to engage with, for example, paying your taxes.
Indeed, I'm not uncritical of that.
And I've got an argument
between two characters in the book where, and in fact, I would very much be bold enough to say this is the first British work of fiction with a picture of a man lying,
just looking at it,
almost half dead on the pavement
next to
by some bins.
Wheelie bin. Yeah.
Alas, you know, that is a reality in Greece now, that you see people going through bins. And they're not migrants. Many of them are older Greeks who have not enough to eat. But, yes, engagement with migrants. I mean, they've had tens of thousands now coming in, and they are still there, 50 or 60,000 immigrants in this, you know, terrible situation. And there are many people who are giving everything to help them, but also a great anxiety among many Greeks that they themselves don't have enough to eat. They can't pay their own electricity bills. So Greece is under huge strain, and the tax thing is all part of that complex story.
I mean, I don't want to end on a sort of falsely positive note, but it does. I mean, we have to acknowledge it is, on a sunny day, one of the most, if not the most beautiful country in Europe, I would.
It is the, for me, it is the yes, most beautiful yeah. country
and actually,
in Europe.
You do talk about the halcyon days of January, where there's just a hint, in the middle of winter, really, there's a hint of the spring and the summer to come.
Yes, I mean, Greece is unpredictable. In an odd way, weather can surprise you. Mm. And in January, there is this sort of 10, 12-day period, which always happens, where you can get a suntan and suddenly people are swimming in the sea again. So it's a very rich and colourful and sunny and warm place on the whole.
Yeah. Well, fascinating to meet you and to chat to you, Victoria. Victoria Hislop, my challenge to you is for you to set a novel in Britain. I suggest, well, I'm going to throw some, I don't know, what's wrong with Bromsgrove?
I'll go there.
Yeah, see what you can do. thank you very much.